A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Hello everyone, Daniel from Winter is Coming here. We have a really, really exciting interview to share with you today with none other than Brandon Sanderson. But before we get into it, I did just want to give a brief spoiler warning. We are going to be discussing Wind and Truth, Brandon's latest novel in the Stormlight Archive, with full spoilers, as well as spoilers for the Cosmere at large and kind of the direction it's headed in. We're also going to be talking about the series Brandon is working on right now, Ghostbloods, and Tailored Realities, his anthology coming out later this year. So just be aware, there will be spoilers for the Stormlight Archive in this video. And now I'm going to stop rambling so you can watch it. So please enjoy this conversation with Brandon Sanderson. Hello and welcome back to the channel. This is Daniel Roman here for winteriscoming.net. And today it is my absolute pleasure and honor to be here with none other than Brandon Sanderson. Brandon is an author who really needs no introduction. He's wrote The Stormlight Archive, Mistborn, Skyward, way more books than we can feasibly name in the duration of this video, as well as finishing The Wheel of Time. And his latest book, Wind and Truth, came out back in December, and we are going to talk about that, about the Cosmere, and your work. So Brandon, how are you doing today? Thanks for taking the time for this.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm doing pretty well. No complaints, actually. I've gotten over a cold and am feeling all chipper today. So that's
good. Nice. Glad you're feeling better. And it looks like, are you like in the Dragonsteel warehouses right now?
Yes. So the front half is office space. I'm in the training room, which is where I tend to go to take meetings and things like that. They set up. So when I take meetings, I sign. You know about this?
Yes. Oh, totally.
Your viewers or readers may not. I need to sign my name 100,000 times a year for the leather bounds that we do. And so I take meetings with my team and I sit and I sign pages and pages of these things that will get bound in the front of the leather bounds. So I was signing the Lost Metal today during the meeting just earlier.
Nice. I give you lots of credit because the multitask would throw me. You're very articulate when you sign. I've been watching your videos a long time.
Well, you know, I have lots of practice doing that. It was actually sitting in lines that taught it to me because you need to be able to write someone's name, sign your name, and have an intelligent conversation with them at the same time. You know, doing that on tour for many years has trained me to be able to sign my name very quickly and without much thought.
Nice. The skills crossed over. All right. So let's get into some Wind and Truth talk because it's been out a few months now.
It has been.
It came out in December. I've read it. I've read just about everything that's in the Cosmere right now. And it's been amazing to kind of see, you know, you released this culmination of the first arc of the Stormlight Archive. Mm-hmm. It's obviously something you've been working on for quite a while.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling about, you know, the reception and kind of where you're at with
Wind and Truth? Largely I felt very good about it. Because I do such extensive beta reads, I know what people are going to say, and I'm usually targeting those emotions. Wind and Truth is and we're going to talk spoilers here. So be aware if you haven't read Wind and Truth, there might be spoilers. I'll try to talk in general terms, but Wind and Truth, when I was working on my original outlines, was the one that I knew would probably be the most divisive. And looking at the responses has been divisive in the ways that I expected and wanted. And so we're good. It's interesting. Each book of the Stormlight Archive, I feel, needs to reinvent itself. They are so long. I write them as if I were plotting a trilogy, each volume a trilogy. And I feel they would get stale really quickly if they didn't reinvent themselves periodically. Well, with each volume. And so there's things I did in Wind and Truth very specifically to make people uncomfortable. And maybe that's not a wise choice, but it definitely was the artistic choice. I can talk you through one of these.
Spoilers. I love that.
So book one is Kalan. Like, Kalan's kind of our through line through the first five books, right? In a lot of ways. Book one is Kaladin rises up and saves the day. Book two is Kaladin has to question his fundamental beliefs. And then book three is Kaladin breaks, right? That's kind of our trilogy. And you have this idea where books one and two, Kaladin steps up at the end. In book three, he fails to do so, right? Book four is breaking Kaladin further to that breaking point. And book five is Kaladin steps back. You've had Kaladin as your main emotional through line through the series so far, and he's not in book five, which is instantly going to make people feel like something's off, something's weird about this book. Kaladin's taking a back seat suddenly, and actually Adolin is doing the kind of the plot structure that is typically in a Kaladin plot structure in book five. And like there, I'm doing these things to just make, and there's a lot more that are kind of like that, that I hope, you know, readers who don't even see structure are going to be like, something's weird about this book. Because I want the book to be the one when people get done that they're just not quite sure what's going on and where the series is going anymore. Because I knew the series needed that book five sort of change of the status quo if I was going to do 10 books. And so I've been watching and I've been seeing that. Now, there is one piece of feedback I've gotten that has surprised me. It's very rare that I'm surprised.
What's that?
And that's the prose in book five, feeling a little more modern.
I totally agree with this. I wrote this in my review of Wind and Truth, that you've been doing this for a while. Like, the prose is not noticeably different to me. That's one that took you aback too.
It took me by surprise. The betas didn't spot it. That's the one that I've been looking at and saying, all right, do I need to reevaluate, right? Like, I like listening to the fandom and things like this. And I do think I've been inching more and more modern, because in my head, the Cosmere is going more and more modern. But that discounts kind of one of the reasons people come to fantasy, and that is as a contrast to a lot of contemporary fiction. People will say it feels more YA, which is very interesting, because what actually is happening, I think, is that there's this kind of contemporary voice to prose that you'll find in YA, romance, thrillers, mystery. But a lot of the readers are going to experience it mostly through YA, coming out of YA, and things like that. And it's interesting to me that that's happening. I also think people are reacting against some of the humor styles that were very popular when I was growing up. Yeah. We call it Whedon-esque or, you know, things like this, because I think I blame Marvel and Star Wars. Boy, I don't want to give a pull quote that's too inflammatory. I feel like there are some misfires with some of that humor. Like, you look at Love and Thunder. Like,
that's a good example.
Right? Because the one before that, Ragnarok, was just really, it's fantastic. Might be the best MCU standalone film, right?
Definitely up there. Agreed.
Yeah, non-Avengers film. It might be, it's like that or Civil War, depending on how you count these things. But it's really a really strong film. And the only kind of flaw that it has is now and then they undercut emotional moments with humor just a titch too much, right?
Yeah.
And then Love and Thunder goes a little bit further. And when you go that step further, I think people are responding against how they're like, we do want to have an emotional connection to our characters. We do want to not have every scene, it's almost like films are afraid to have drama because they're afraid the kids will call it cringe. So they
Yeah.
have to cringe it before the kids can call it cringe and be like, we knew it was cringe, see?
Yeah.
And I think people are responding against that, which makes them hypersensitive. And so there's something to watch for in that as well, because Wind and Truth has some of its humor scenes up front. We're
Yeah.
normally there in the middle because I kind of do the relaxing. We're getting ready for the big explosion. So part one of Wind and Truth is the, all right, let's spend some peaceful time with the characters before things go crazy. And normally that's in the middle of a book. Anyway,
Yeah.
I've been looking at those things with the pros and whatnot. And if something's off, it's only off by 5 or 10%. But I do listen. I do.
Yeah.
And as kind of a student of how prose and storytelling works, it's interesting to try and dig back to, all right, what's going on here? What's, can I interpret what people are saying? So,
Yeah.
but largely very, I actually haven't read your review. I should have done that before I came, but
Oh, that's
it felt better to just not and go into the interview not predisposed.
Yeah, that's
But
good. I appreciate that. There's
yeah.
less pressure that way.
Yeah. Then you don't have to worry. If you totally like, I believe strongly in the power, journalism not having me interfere with them.
Yeah,
People are
which
allowed
is
to dislike
great.
my books.
Yeah.
Totally fine. All I would ask is that they assume I'm doing what I'm doing intentionally, because I usually am.
Yes.
Not always though. The prose was what, well, I guess it was kind of me stepping toward being more modern because the Cosmere is moving more modern. But as long as people are like, Sanderson did this and I don't like it, rather than Sanderson doesn't know what he's doing. I've been doing this a long time. I
Yeah,
usually
yeah.
know what I'm doing. I just might make choices that you don't like, which you might be right. What I and I again I haven't, but I'm just talking you to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've read this before. The big thing I when I turned in Wind and Truth to Peter, editorial department in June before it came out, I said, all right, this is the book that has the biggest danger of breaking my career. So
Yeah.
beware, be warned. This is the one doing this and then making them wait 8 years, this is the thing that could end it all. So, I think it's the right artistic choice.
Yeah.
I think, when the series is done, people are like, wow, I'm so glad we had book five. But I also think it's going to be a book that's going to make some people uncomfortable. So there's me
Yeah.
talking at length about it.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
That's awesome. And that is a very daring decision. The hiatus,
Yeah.
that's the sort of thing like, so I've been a fan of A Song of Ice and Fire for a long time, and people love to gripe about the Winds of Winter, but like I remember A Dance with Dragons. Like that was around a 6-year gap from A Feast for Crows. And I think it's such a credit to how well you've communicated with your fan base that they weren't like, oh my God, 6 years, because that's the same amount of time. But
yeah,
so what you said about the pros and kind of moving into that almost more modern speak, you know, like the therapist joke was the thing that came
therapist
through,
which joke.
I didn't mind, because again,
I love
like,
the therapist joke, but that might be the one that's a step too far. I knew when I was writing it, this could be a step too far for people.
It's almost like a test. Yeah.
But sometimes you just have to do the things that make you smile.
Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
but so let me ask you, I watched an interview a while back that you did with Daniel Green, where you kind of talked about how you felt like you weren't, I think you said, like, equipped to write like true hard science fiction, like a Kim Stanley Robinson, which like makes total sense to me. Like they're very different tonally, like hard sci-fi versus epic fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost feels like the longer the Cosmere has gone on, it almost feels like it is moving towards science fiction, but where obviously the science is the science of the Cosmere. So
exactly.
Like I'm thinking of things like the Sunlit Man and Wind and Truth, The Lost Metal. So can you talk a little bit about, like, to some extent, those linguistic things are going to be part of that. Can you talk about how you're navigating that transition? Like, do you still expect to be able to write epic fantasy in the Cosmere, or like, are we in the sci-fi era?
What an excellent question. There's a whole lot that I've thought about on this for many years. One is that I don't want to leave behind epic fantasy completely. Though I do think that as I move forward, you're going to see two types of epic fantasy in the Cosmere. One is takes place outside the current timeline. When I jump back and I do Hoid's backstory, we're back to epic fantasy, though it'll be Bronze Age. And things like, you know, not necessarily the voice of, but things like Trust of the Emerald Sea, where you see touches of the rest of the universe has hit the science fiction era. And there are science fiction things here, but, you know, this planet is not there yet and whatnot. I think you'll see mostly those two types of things. You'll see a lot more Dune style, where it is Dune is such a strange beast, and I love it for it. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
A Fire upon the Deep has a bit of this same feel, where it's like, is this fantasy or is this science fiction? Well, Dune is science fiction, but man, it feels like an epic fantasy.
Yeah.
Dune is what proved to me that you can put guns in something and still have the feel of that epic fantasy that I love.
Cool.
Right? Because Dune feels more like Game of Thrones and Wheel of Time than some other fantasy books that are strictly fantasy do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of some of the tone. So you'll see me doing some things like that as well. I still don't think I'm equipped to write true hard science fiction. I respect it greatly. But I feel like, as I've always said, kind of the difference between what I do and what hard science fiction does is hard science fiction takes what we have and extrapolates realistically to a future. And I take a future and then I justify it with the mechanics in world, right?
Yeah.
And that's a very different thing.
That makes sense.
The biggest challenge I will have is I don't want my books to read like technical manuals. There are some people who love that. I let myself do some of that with Navani in book 4, and I love it. But I have to be careful that every book doesn't read like a hard science fiction where you have to have a PhD in the Cosmere to understand what's going on. That's actually a challenge for the Ghostbloods. I don't, I want people who read the original Mistborn trilogy, who maybe weren't into Wax and Wayne, to be able to jump to this. And I want it to not read like a technical manual, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can read Tom Clancy and not have to understand the technology that, in specific that he's referencing, that are causing some of the problems in the Cold War thrillers and things. And so there's a line to walk there, right? How much do I explain? How much do I leave to the hardcore Cosmere fans? How much do I put in an appendix for them? Star Trek gets away with a ton of techno babble, but you don't have to understand any of it.
Yeah.
Where is that balance? And so that's the biggest challenge for this book other than, you know, writing a fantastic book.
Yeah, yeah. So Ghostbloods, you're into it now.
Yes.
How much of a, is that something you're thinking about a lot as you're working on it? How, and just generally, how's the writing treating you on this series?
It's going really well. So if you don't know the history of Mistborn, I pitched Ghostbloods in 2006.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Which would have been the year that
Mistborn came out.
The first one came out. Yeah.
So I called my editor. It's before the first one came out. And I said, just so you know, here's kind of my outline for the series. And it was original trilogy, Ghostbloods, and science fiction trilogy.
Yeah.
And I walked him through all three of those and said, here's what I'm doing. Epic fantasy becomes kind of the foundation of mythology and religion for an urban fantasy. And then we jump into a space age science fiction. And back then I was referencing Fifth Element as kind of a fantasy sci-fi
nice.
Myth, that I was shooting for. And saying this is what we're looking at for kind of a trilogy of trilogies. And he's like, wow, you're ambitious. And he kind of sounded like, this will never happen. But it did. It is finally happening. And so it's been 20 years that I've had like what I wanted to do with Ghostbloods. And I did borrow a little of that for Wax and Wayne. There's things that I took and said, no, this will fit better in the Wax and Wayne series. It's very cool. It feels awesome to finally, you know, you plan something for 20 years and you get to sit down and finally write it. It feels really nice to get this out of my head. Like there's a few of those, like when I finally get to write the Hoid backstory, that's another one. It's just been like, I know exactly what it's going to be. I just got to find the hole in my schedule to write it. And that one's not planned until after Stormlight 10. So people don't have to panic too much. But, you know, I've wanted to do this forever. And so being able to sit down and finally do it feels extremely gratifying. And the writing's going great.
Awesome.
You know, these are characters that I've known for 20 years that I finally get to introduce to people.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. So you mentioned Wax and Wayne, and this was something I was curious about. So that was the unplanned era
unplanned.
Of Mistborn.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So has that changed? Often I feel like when like fans on forums and stuff, when they refer to the Ghostbloods era, it usually gets said as like the 80s thriller, tech thriller era of Mistborn.
Yes.
Has that tone changed at all or anything about it changed at all because of Wax and Wayne or just in general?
Yeah.
Because now, you know, it's been 20 years. You've written more than 20 books in the Cosmere. Like
a decent amount has changed. Like you evolve over time. The core characters and the goals that I'm having have stayed the same. You know, like I have an art department now. I put them for 6 months doing concept art on Mistborn Modern Era. And they just kind of were churning out, here's something we can do. I felt like George Lucas saying, okay, I'm going to do this one. Go further on this. Give me more on this. This is the wrong direction. Give me something else for this. And I have all this big folder of concept art they did for me. And they're all off onto other things now. But I have this. That's real different.
That's so
right?
cool.
And Ben McSweeney, who's just awesome. He's you know, he did the concept art for Way of Kings back when I did my original pitch. And now he's on staff. He just loves Mistborn. I found him through Mistborn fan art. That's how I hired him in like 2008 or 9, whenever it was. And he came up with all these ideas that are really cool for melding some science and fantasy. And, you know, like, what are we doing with, how does this feel different, from other urban fantasies? We don't want to just do Mistborn, you know, our world, but there's Mistborn. We want to feel like Scadrial. So, that's been a lot of fun. That's changed how I play and interact with that. Doing Wax and Wayne, like I always told people that one of the key plot points was like a Mistborn serial killer. I kind of did that already, and I borrowed that whole plot sequence and put it in Shadows of Self. And so I'm not going that direction. I'm taking the other kind of parts of it and things. So there's things that people, you know, that slipped into the Wax and Wayne books and felt like a good match. I also moved the time frame up about 20 years in world so that the Wax and Wayne books aren't quite as distant a memory. Like people that you met during those could theoretically still be alive, the younger ones, right?
It's been, okay.
We're doing like 50-year jump instead of a 70-year jump. And
yeah,
that 20 years is relevant for some of these things. And I've already set up the Cold War, so I don't have to set that up. It's already in existence. So, you know, stuff like that.
So this is it's a much more tightly tied series to Wax and Wayne than Wax and Wayne was to the original trilogy, in a way.
Yes. Yeah, in a way. Like, I do intend for people to be able to just pick it up, even if they haven't read the original trilogy or if they haven't read Wax and Wayne. But, you know, Wax and Wayne will be lots of good backstory. If you haven't read Wax and Wayne, you read this and be like, oh, you know, yeah.
So it's interesting. You said, you know, you had an art department. This is a new thing that you maybe didn't have when you conceptualized this, which is obviously a pretty big marker of like where you are in your career, which is about as established as it's humanly possible to get for an author, breaking records on Kickstarter, doing all these things. But there's something that I think is really interesting is when you did the Secret Projects, I remember watching your videos either when you announced it or shortly after, where you talked about how it reminded you of the early days of your career, writing those books in secret and then being able to be like, here's a book I wrote that no one knew about. And you're almost, correct me if I'm wrong here, but you're doing something similar with Ghostbloods in that you're writing all three books before you release them, which for viewers who may not know, that's the same thing you did with the original trilogy. You wrote all three books before the first one was out. So can you talk, what made you decide to approach it that way? And can you talk at all about like the importance of reclaiming that early career spark for you when you're at this monumental level?
That's also excellent question. So what made me decide? We'll start there. I think every series would be better if it were done this way. but realistically, we can't, right? Yeah. I can take 3 years and write three books, but Stormlight, like writing one Stormlight book alone takes me 3 years.
Yeah.
Even if only 18 months of that is like hardcore writing, I can't just pick up and go. Like there's so much work that goes on kind of brain space wise to writing one of those, that, you know, I just can't. And so because of that, it's unrealistic to assume. But it's how Tolkien did it, right? I like what it did for the Mistborn original trilogy, being able to write that straight through. Just let me get, like, there are things I could do. I could get the exact wording in the first book for the foreshadowing of the very last scene. Well, not the very last, but, you know, the climactic scene. You can get those things in, whereas with Stormlight, I have to do my best at guessing. Again, we're on spoilers, right? Like,
yes, full spoilers here.
Like, I didn't know until middle of, like, you know, book to a later book that I was going to age up Gav, that I was going to try doing that, right? And so in the first book, the foreshadowing, it's just the suckling babe, right? I get later on, and I'm like, this kid's going to have to be older than that. He'll have to be like at least six. That's not a suckling babe. And then I'm like, no, he needs to be even older than that. I'm going to have to time dilate him, right? The metaphor still works.
Yeah,
but
totally.
But the language that I wrote in 2009 that I have to pick up and 24 when I'm, you know, polishing the book for release. You know, there are things you just have to accept that it's going to have to be a little more metaphoric. Whereas if you can write them all through, you can just make sure the language is exactly as you want it and things like that. So I like being able to do that.
Yeah.
Reclaiming my spark is an interesting question to ask. I've never lost my spark for writing. I absolutely love this. The Secret Projects, though, taught me that once in a while I need to blow off steam. I need to be able to write something that I don't have a deadline for. And that's the big difference between my career now and my career before I got published is when in those early days, I lived in kind of a very, it was an awesome time. It was also nerve-wracking because I didn't know if I'd have a career. But I had a group of friends and expanding acquaintances and their friends who were all reading my books, I had hundreds of people reading my books when I was unpublished, waiting for the next one. But when I finished a book, they never knew what they were going to get. Because I didn't write sequels back then. I was trying to break in, and I knew I could only break in with a first book. And so all of this growing fan base would just get something random from me. They'd have no idea what was coming next. And I liked that flexibility and freedom. And so that's why I was able to take these 6 months. They ended in January. But I finished Wind and Truth, and I took 6 months. And I said, I can work on whatever I want during this time. Nice. And a big chunk of that became the novella for Taylor Realities, 50,000 words. So it's, it's novella for me. It's technically a novel, but it's a very short novel.
Yeah.
And part of that became going back to White Sand and fiddling on that. Part of it became a screenplay for The Emperor's Soul that I'm very proud of.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I need more screenplay practice.
Yeah.
Right. Like I envy George so much, him having worked in television for so many years and then coming to it and suddenly, being able to have a great influence on the first seasons of Game of Thrones because he had been, working in television.
Totally.
And I envy him that experience. And so this is like my fifth or so screenplay. So I'm getting to where I feel comfortable writing them and offering feedback on them, but I still need more experience. So
yeah.
So decided, hey, I'm gonna write a screenplay on Emperor's Soul. Stuff like that. I've now blown off that steam. And now I was itching to get back to something my true love is this deep continuity across me. That's why I keep coming back to it. But I just need a break from it now and then.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I do need to ask about Tailored Realities, which is your your next book. That's the one you have coming out this year.
Yeah.
But it is a non-Cosmere book, which
non-Cosmere.
The hardcore Cosmere fans. Yes, you write lots that's not in the Cosmere.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything you had to do differently approaching, say, Tailored Realities, which is a collection of non-Cosmere works, versus, say, Arcanum Unbounded, which was your Cosmere-specific collection?
Right. I knew I wanted a cornerstone story for Tailored Realities. The Cosmere collection, it didn't have anything exclusive to it, right? When we released it, I believe one of the Stormlight novellas
Edge
had not
Dancer.
Been released. Widely, but then it immediately got released on its own, later. And there were already plans for that. I did write Edge Dancer kind of for it, but I also knew Tor was gonna. And so I knew for Tailored Realities, having a cornerstone story was in some ways more important.
Yeah.
It was important for the Cosmere collection, but that's their, I released these collections because I feel that they're fan friendly, not because they make money. Collections don't make money. In fact, Edge Dancer selling on its own has made more money than Taylor's Realities. So has Dawn Shard. Easily, handily, just tons more. And so the collections are there because I feel fans need a place to be just like, I can't keep track of all the stuff he's doing.
Yeah.
Here's a book that has all of it.
Yeah.
If you have this, you're up to date, at least counting, all the years leading up to its release. They're just a fan-friendly thing to have.
Totally.
Get it all together. I fully anticipate, I shouldn't say these, I fully anticipate that Taylor Rowley's, I don't want to give you too good a poll quote, but I don't anticipate it breaking any sales records. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds fair.
It's there to be a fan-friendly way to get everything collected that you would want to have for your collection so that you don't have to hunt it all down. Maybe someday we will do a Moment Zero on its own like we have. Probably will, because, if the other things are an example, they do sell better on their own.
Yeah.
But I like having it here just as it's a statement to the fans. I'm going to do this. We'll eventually someday have Arcanum Unbounded 2, right?
Cool. Can't wait. I Yeah, the fan friendliness, I hardcore relate to that because I have Arcanum Unbounded, and I remember when that came out being like, this is awesome, because I didn't know where I could go to read Sixth of the Dusk before this book came out. So are there any other stories aside from Moment Zero in Tailored Realities that you were especially excited to make more broadly available?
Well, it's got my only flash fiction piece.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I am
flash fiction for Brandon Sanderson.
Under
okay.
500 words.
Okay.
I'm not convinced it's very good, but it only takes one page in the collection. So people will forbear. I think it's pretty cool, but you know, flash fiction is not my strong suit. It's good for me to practice it, right?
Yeah.
You want to practice all the things that that are uncomfortable for you.
Yeah, totally.
So I wrote this. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Until I had that cold. So I wanted to make sure that I do practice that now and then, and so I slip that in. But you know, the showpieces are going to be Moment Zero. They're going to be they're going to be the Perfect State, which was nominated for the Hugo, right? And they're going to be Snapshot. You know, those are going to be my strongest stories in the collection, almost assuredly. There's some other fun things in there from around, you know. We didn't put any of my old fiction in, so this doesn't include any Sanderson Curiosities. So none of the stuff that I did before I got published, but it does have Defending Elysium in it.
Cool.
And some of the stuff that I wrote pretty early in my career, technically I wrote before I got published, but then I sold right around the time that I got published. So basically this is everything non-Cosmere that's not Legion. Legion's its own collection.
Yeah.
You'll have it all there. And then it's got like three exclusive short stories. One is the flash fiction piece. One is another story that I wrote just kind of for fun and never sent anywhere. It's too short to really do anything. And I don't generally send the short fiction to the magazines because I wouldn't be able to tell if they were buying it because it's from me or not, right? Having Brandon Sanderson on your cover. So I just saved it for this. And then Moment Zero, which, you know, I'm interested to the reaction to. One thing, you know, it is a cop story. And writing about police officers in today's environment is something where you got to be like, you know, like I love the classic cop story, right? I love me, you know, a John McClane, or things like this, right? But we do interface differently with police officers in 2025 than we did in the 90s when Die Hard was written. You know, there's, I actually kind of put some talking about social issues in it in the first draft. And my beta readers exclusive are like, there's not place for this, Brandon. Even touching on it is a bad idea. You can't do a good job with it. This is an explosive action story. And I actually pulled back on a lot of that. Just because it's just like, and so I'm curious if people, you know, like I have a pair of heroic police officers. I think there are heroic police officers out there. Does not mean that we shouldn't be having difficult conversations about how policing is handled in the United States.
And
absolutely. So, you know, I'm curious if people will be like, how's the response to just a classic cop story in today's environment?
Yeah, that's really intriguing. That makes me more excited to read this story.
Well, like I said, I pulled back on talking about this, both from the non-cops and the cops I had read it, just be like, this is the place for it. I do think I talked about that enough in Wax and Wayne, where you kind of have Wax versus Marcy, where she's like, hey, you know, we need to police differently than you policed when you were out in the roughs and were, and things like that. So I did dig into it. But, you know, it is an interesting thing to think about when you approach writing a cop drama these days.
Yeah, totally. So I know we only have a half an hour, but it's up to you if you want to keep talking. I have an open schedule, so it's your call.
See.
If there are any specific things you'd like to talk about.
Okay, I do need to get going. I've
Sure.
got a publicist here saying we can probably push other things back 5 minutes. So if we can get done in the next 7 minutes or so, so maybe one more question. I'm
Sounds
sorry I talked so
good.
much, Daniel.
No, it's been
We barely got
wonderful.
through half your questions, I believe, but
I always come over prepared with questions
yeah.
because there's nothing more embarrassing than going into an interview and someone talking very
And
succinctly and then running out of questions with like 10 minutes left.
yeah.
So, all right. I want to sneak in one here about, I guess, let's bring it back around to Wind and Truth. There are a lot
Okay.
of things. I'm curious about your Elantris sequels, but I do want to make sure we are talking Wind and Truth here because that's that. I'm a huge Stormlight Archive fan, so that it was a big deal, that book coming out, because it's the end of the first arc. A lot of
Yep.
people had been waiting a very long time for that book.
Yep.
So this we can tie this back around to Elantris here in this way, because this is a major spoiler here for people.
Yep.
You dropped what I thought was a pretty mind-blowing revelation in near the end of Wind and Truth that Odium, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, was the one who caused the deaths of the shards on Cell, which is the planet
Yes.
of Elantris. How long, because Elantris came out in 2005, how long have
Right.
you known and planned that secret? And were there any other
Yeah, big
bombshells like that in
revelations.
Wind and Truth that you were
Let's
especially
see.
excited to reveal
Yeah.
finally?
I forget what I've told fans and what I haven't, right?
Yeah.
Like, I believe I had mentioned just in signings and things, not that everyone should know it. It's not been in the books until now, but I
Yeah.
believe I mentioned that Odium was responsible for this back in the early teens.
Okay.
When I sketched out the original broad strokes of the Cosmere, this happened right before, like, when I sold Elantris and was working on Mistborn. That's when I sketched out the broad strokes of the
Yeah.
Cosmere with Cell, Elantris, Roshar and Scadrial forming kind of my backbones, right?
Yeah.
And so I knew about the interactions between the shards on those planets in pretty intricate detail. Let's see, what other things were people waiting for? I mentioned that I think all the shards have been named now for people, and so
Oh.
people were waiting for that. Wind and Truth got that across. Are there what other big bombshells did I release? It's hard for me to remember what I have told. Like, this is one of my
Shallan,
things. Shallan
was that
finally
one?
getting, yes, oh, that one. Yeah, let's talk about Shallan's parentage. So that, it's so hard to, well, not so hard. One of the things you have to do when you're writing a book across 20 years is you have to make a decision. And the decision is,
Okay.
how well are you going to foreshadow your bombshells? I was able to kind of watch Robert Jordan and read his notes, and he never said, but I got the sense he got very annoyed that fans were guessing his bombshell revelations
Yeah.
very early on. And you get the sense of annoyance from him.
That's funny.
And I have no evidence for this, but for Wheel of Time fans, I really think that he changed who Demandred was.
Oh.
Because fans guessed it. I think I'm in that camp. The notes
Yeah.
don't indicate either way, but I'm in
Yeah.
that camp, right? George has even talked about this, I believe, where he's talked about fans and theories and how you interface with them. One of the things I decided very early on was I was not going to change things because fans guessed them.
Yeah.
It's important to me for multiple reasons. One being that I think the books will stand the test of time better if I don't, because people who don't have 12 years to guess things and
Yeah.
just read the book straight through are not going to. They're not going to pick up that Gav is the champion, right? I
Totally.
really don't think anyone's going to guess that if they sit and read the books. But the foreshadowing's all there so strongly that if you're the type that is used to my tricks and has 15 years from the first book until book five is out, that the theories can all be there.
Yeah.
Shallan's mother can be guessed. And I kind of like that. Part of it annoys me as an author because you're like, I can't fool these people anymore. Part
Yeah.
of me is like, well, a twist is all about the execution and not the actual twist, right?
Totally.
You don't twist just to have a twist. You twist because it makes the story and the characters more meaningful and the narrative more meaningful in some way. Shallan's mother, I think, is a very meaningful twist for lots of reasons. And it was baked into the series, and you know, fans found all the clues, and they brought them together and presented arguments, and you know, they were right. I do like that fans can be right. I do like that's how my books are, that you can do this. But fans do have to understand that expectation of having your mind blown by twists, I can still pull one out now and then, like what happened with Terra Vangian at the end of book four.
That's a good one.
They have to be a different kind of twist. And I have more of those planned, but some things just kind of happen organically to the characters. Some things I make sure are built up over time so you can go back and find all the clues. So I'm pleased with how the twists like that happened, and whatnot. But I do recognize, like, for some fans, it's like, I watched this in Wheel of Time. The being part of the fandom, people get so invested in the theories and reading the theories that when it just is one of the theories, like when Asmodean's killer was just one of the theories, a lot of people are like, that's it?
Really? Yeah, yeah, totally. I remember. You know? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it can't not be that because you've now discussed every option ad nauseum. To blow your minds, it would require undermining the actual narrative of the story. So I do hope to be able to blow people's minds now and then. I do hope that, you know, the decision Dalinar made at the end of Wind and Truth was unexpected and leaves lots of question marks in a good way. But a lot of things, like, you know what? I'm totally fine if you figure it out. That's why the foreshadowing's there, so that you can. If you couldn't, then those styles of twists are not good twists, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, it's that what, there's an anecdote somewhere, I forget who said it, that a good twist, you should kick yourself for not figuring it out after, you know.
Surprising yet inevitable is the great phrase. And I shoot for twists like that. And doing it across books, you know what? If people read closely, which I love that they do, they're going to guess them. That's okay. Hopefully they'll enjoy how I perform the twist.
Yeah. Well, I think with Wind and Truth, it seems like people did respond really well to a lot of those twists. You know, the Dalinar one, and the Kaladin one at the end, I'm getting a little emotional thinking about that. That one was so well done. So
I did see people guessing that one, the foreshadowings there, but I saw a lot fewer. This was, I think people thought it was a harebrained theory when people were posting them on Reddit and things.
Yeah.
It's what one of the ones I was most excited to be able to show off. Because again, we needed this book to make you ask questions about where are we going, what's even happening, and now people can understand why two of the heralds are main characters in the back five. Tal and Ash are both main characters, and you kind of will see us dealing with who they are a little bit more, and now you kind of know how our inroads to that might happen. So
cool, can't wait. Well, Brandon, I know you got to go. Thank you so much. This has been just wonderful to talk to you about this. I love your work, love what you've been doing with the Cosmere, and really appreciate you taking the time for it.
Yeah, it's my first interview kind of post where I could talk about some of these things. So I think fans will be excited to hear me chat about some of the stuff. So thanks for asking the questions.
Yeah, of course. It was my pleasure. All right. Mm-hmm. And for all of you out there listening, like, subscribe, make sure to read this on the site winteriscoming.net, where there will be a transcription with all sorts of extra little details about the Cosmere. But for now, take care.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.